My first foray into film was a theatrical release called You and Me, the absurdity of the United Nations and the abject failure of the United Nations. But it was at its heart, it was meant to be sort of an entertaining docutainment, we like to call it. That came out relatively successfully in 2012, opened theaters around the United States. We sold it for broadcast in 10 or 15 countries around the world. That kind of opened the door for what I'm doing now, which are these sort of smaller, more stuntish short videos.
First, we'll go back to You and Me. Mm-hmm. You wanted to deliver a message through that documentary. I wanted to comment that Israelis usually, you preach to the converted because they don't hold much respect to the UN.
The words Israel were never mentioned in the documentary by design. There's so many things to indict the UN on. There was no need to discuss how absurdly biased it is against Israel. And the reality was that we wanted to do that on purpose because we didn't want to alienate anybody. And unfortunately, much of the media is not exactly pro-Israel. If they perceived it as some pro-Israel movie, then we felt it wouldn't get such a fair shake. So we didn't discuss it at all. We discussed other issues. The entire thing was born out of the Holocaust, right? To stop genocide around the world. Yet what we've seen is nothing but continuous genocide. We saw it in Rwanda. We see it in Sudan. We saw it in Bosnia. And the UN has been, at best, impotent to stop any of it. So that was clearly one of the main failures and one of the main driving points of the movie.
Do you see anything positive in the UN, in its functioning?
They have very good cafes. If I was in a generous mood, I'll say, yeah, they do an okay job with food distribution and medicinal distribution. They do okay.
Because for me, the UN is an organization that all the flags of the world are side by side, proudly outside the UN buildings.
Mm-hmm. And, including the Palestinian flag.
And representatives from all over the world meet, including those that are supposed to be outcasts and whatever. They meet all in the UN.
Right. So ultimately, that's what the problem is. If you had to point out one problem, what would it be about how the UN has been so dysfunctional? And the reality is, you just can't have a forum for everybody to sit down in a room and discuss because we're not even speaking the same language. I don't mean that literally. I mean that figuratively. That we're speaking a different moral language. You just simply can't have any common ground with Sudan, with North Korea, whose entire country is a gulag. There's no point of discussion to have. So all you have are different centers of power competing with one another and nothing gets done.
But at least you get North Korea to discuss something with
discuss
you.
Discuss what? What are they discussing?
Doesn't matter. They are there to discuss.
But it does matter. It matters very much because their ability to discuss, and I'm doing air quotes because I think we're on radio now, is what is part of the problem. All they do is push, as we say in America, kick the can down the road. There's nothing to discuss. If there was something to discuss, I'm happy to negotiate with my enemies. I'm not against negotiation with my enemy. But if the whole point of the negotiation is to obfuscate, is the whole point of negotiation is to hide what I'm really doing, then negotiation is nothing but another way of failing.
We are talking to Ami Horowitz. Ami, you've produced, and anyone can go into Google and to YouTube and see your incredible short documentaries.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about it?
I love doing these short videos. I have a lot of ideas on things that are important to discuss, a lot of hypocrisies that need to be exposed, and they all can't be a movie. They all can't spend 3 years of my life making an opus for each one. So the videos is a great format where if I find one particular issue that animates me, then it's a great format to sit and try to come up with an interesting stunt, an interesting spin on how to expose that particular hypocrisy.
Can you tell our listeners about your interviews in Ireland? That was incredible. I loved
it. Thank you. Yeah. So again, I like to do things in a slightly different way than most people do. And for your listeners who don't know, there's a phenomenon out there called BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction. Its sole purpose is delegitimization of Israel. That's its sole purpose. So what most people may or may not know about this is that Ireland is one of the epicenters of the BDS movement. In fact, there's an entire city called the City of Galloway, which is an Israel-free zone. So I said, okay, let's see how important humanitarian ethics are. If in fact the reason why they want to boycott Israel is because they believe Israel is abusing human rights, I would disagree. But okay, let's assume that for a moment they believe that. Let's see how true that is. how important human rights really is to them. So I went to three particular companies who were boycotting Israel, and I went as a salesman from three different countries, North Korea, Sudan, and Iran. North Korea, I don't have to tell your audiences, is one large gulag. Iran routinely executes gay people and rapes its prisoners, and Sudan is committing genocide. And those are just a few things I could have mentioned about these particular countries. So I said, okay, so let's see if they'll buy my product. So I went from each country, pretend to be a salesman, no problem buying from my company, my country. But when I mentioned, do you buy from Israel, they were adamant they wouldn't buy from Israel.
So they didn't worry about buying from Sudan, from North Korea, but they wouldn't buy any products from Israel.
No way.
The other short documentary that I've seen was that you're standing with a flag of ISIS, Daesh.
Yeah.
You wave it in one of the campuses in the U.S.
Yes.
And you shout all these offensive slogans, and nobody even looks at you.
That's not true. Three people came up to me and supported me.
Tell us about it. First of all, where was the campus? Which campus was that?
The University of California, Berkeley, which is one of the most prestigious universities in America, and by far the best public school university, public university in America.
Because you stand there with a flag, with a black flag of ISIS,
yes,
of Daesh,
yes,
and you rent a brave against America, against your own country.
That's correct. So my expectation would be that people would shout me down, beat me up, something. I was there for 2 or 3 hours. Thousands of students passed by me, thousands. And the only comments I got were supportive until I felt a need for a smoke, and I lit up a cigarette. Within seconds, a student came up to me and said, you can't smoke here, as I'm holding the ISIS flag. So then I thought, okay, well, maybe, you know, listen, I don't know if you guys know, University of California, Berkeley is known for free speech, for tolerance. Maybe there's another example of, you know, it's just they're a tolerant bunch of people. So I decided to put that to the test, and the next day I came with the Israeli flag, and I flew that. And it took about 30 seconds for the invective to come flowing down on me. Screw you, Zionist pig, get off campus. We love Hamas. We love Hamas. I couldn't understand that one. It was an incredible social experiment.
It was, and it was very sad, actually, to see it.
And
you make you think, where is the U.S. is heading? And talking about the U.S., we've got elections coming, and we are in the pre-selection process. And mm-hmm. I know you are involved in politics in the U.S. Can you tell us about this campaign and how do you see where it's taking us?
I mean, it's the most incredible elections that certainly in my lifetime and probably anybody's lifetime. Nothing will be more unbelievable than the 2000 election that was essentially a tie. But this, in terms of the election process, is it's fascinating. It's what you have is essentially in the two candidates, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, you have two candidates that people look at and say they're not part of the establishment. And this is a very anti-establishment election that's going on. What's particularly fascinating about this election from the Democratic side is Bernie Sanders is essentially a, you know, they call him a socialist. He's essentially a European socialist. He is somebody who looks at Europe as utopia, the socialist part of Europe. What I think is dangerous as an American, that in two cycles, and maybe less, he's going to be the norm in the Democratic Party. For some bizarre reason, we're looking at the implosion of Europe politically, socially, culturally, economically. Yet for some reason, the Democrats in America insist on being more like Europe and less American. And that troubles me a great deal.
And can you tell us about the Republicans, Donald Trump?
Donald Trump is a fan of the ISIS flag video, I can tell you that.
Oh, yes.
Donald Trump is a very interesting individual who would make a terrible president. I am one who thinks that the Donald Trump phenomenon will actually lose steam. I think he's running into some political realities that he didn't necessarily expect. And I think that as the Republican field gets winnowed down to him and one or two other candidates, I think he's going to find himself in a whole lot of trouble. I think we had a young president, Barack Obama, who was an abysmal failure.
And why do you see Obama as a failure?
President Obama, despite what Hillary Clinton is trying to paint herself in, President Obama is more in the mold of a Bernie Sanders than a Hillary Clinton. He again, looks at Europe as a paragon of what humanity can be. Everything he has done has been trying to denude America of its Americanism. The entrepreneurial spirit that has built America for what it is, he's trying to take that away. I think one of his biggest failures, one of the most significant things he will leave his mark in our country, was he has increased American dependency on the government. And what I mean by say by that is there are more people now on welfare than ever before in American history by a large number. There's nothing worse in my mind than being dependent on somebody else, particularly dependent on the on a government.
And about his foreign policies?
Look at Syria, look at Russia, look at Israel, look at Saudi Arabia. Failure, 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 failure.
No leadership? Why failure? What do you think? Why, what part did he play in what's happening in Syria or in Saudi Arabia?
Well, in Saudi Arabia, he has taken an American ally and left them on their own. He has cut them out of the process and gone and made a deal with their arch nemesis, Iran. And what happens, everything in foreign policy ends up having, what you intend to happen is not necessarily what the end result is going to be. The most important unintended consequence of doing that is you leave your allies wondering, huh, he just cut us out of the process. What kind of ally is the United States of America? Ukraine is wondering that right now. Ukraine was not that far away from being part of the European Union. And now they're wondering, where's America? And now we're part of Russia, essentially. The Saudis feel the same way. The Israelis now feel the same way. Egypt feels that way. And there's a tremendous price to be paid when somebody who was your ally realized that you didn't have their back. A tremendous price to be paid. And we haven't seen anywhere near what that price is going to be yet.
And do you think that America still got a place in leading the world or showing leadership to the world? Maybe he wanted to isolate America and break away from this pattern of leadership around the world.
No, he's not an isolationist. He just feels that America is no different than any other country. So therefore, why should we take a leading role in Syria? Seemed to make sense for him for Russia to be more involved in Syria. Look at the result of that.
We are talking to Ami Horowitz, and you're listening to SBS Radio broadcasting around Australia. Can you tell our listeners where to find you?
They could subscribe to my YouTube site at Ami Horowitz or Ami Horowitz on Facebook or Twitter. Very simple. AmiHorowitz. All of my videos are on Fox News.
Ami Horowitz, thank you very much.